So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another weekly episode of Aiden's Analysis on the WWE podcast. It's been another week of lockdown. I hope everyone's still staying safe and keeping your minds busy where possible. And thank you to everyone that has reached out on Twitter during the week and has been interacting in this difficult time. And of course, I hope you continue to do so. I won't blabber on too much. Let's just dive straight in with what we're here for. It is the review of SmackDown. So, I'm sure you all noticed on Raw, and obviously it carried on with SmackDown, WWE have changed the location of the hard camera, like Raw did. So, it's actually much better because due to the size of the Performance Center, I just feel like it's a little bit better. The fact you now can see the ramp with the large SmackDown logo, with the whole blue theme, obviously it's red on Raw, it just adds something different and it adds that individual sort of feel to each brand, that's in my opinion, rather than obviously you're just staring at empty seats. And in fact, then the superstars perform into the empty seats. Like, since the change of the hard camera, so it's sort of like at the end of the ring behind what would be normally be the commentary, looking at the ring, and then obviously seeing the ramp, I just feel like the promos have been mainly speaking to someone else instead of, like, you know, in a normal episode where they're in the ring and they're just talking to the crowd, they're talking to the hard camera. It's actually more you've either got someone in the ring or potentially someone on the big screen that you're talking to. I mean, we've seen this with what I thought was an excellent paced Seth Rollins walk around the ring in a clash of words with Kevin Owens. And then we also saw this at the start of this SmackDown episode with Bayley and Sasha. They started with what can only be described as sort of a petty moan. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't a good mic work, because I actually thought it was effective and the message came across loud and clear, highlighting the dislike of Paige and her decision to put Bayley and her title in a match against five other women, obviously now four, due to Dana Brooke being pulled out from the card due to, I'm assuming, illness with the current situation. I think she's got to self-isolate. I think that's the same as Rey Mysterio. But anyway, she's off the card. And they're talking to each other. So again, what I'm saying is, normally, of course, they normally come out together, but Bayley would address the crowd or address the camera where they're actually talking to each other, and it almost feels it doesn't need to be fans there anymore, which they're sort of like working towards. It's what they had to do because obviously the current situation. What happened next was very predictable to me. In fact, I could tell what was going to happen. And I was actually waiting for the other women to come out and join the ring. So Lacey Evans was first. And I must say, I still cannot see the dislike in her character. I mean, it's a typical classy, like almost snobby, the act of a southern woman, which to me she plays absolutely perfectly. And even her finishing move, the woman's right, which is basically a con of the Big Show's KO punch. But even that move is so aptly named for a persona. I think it just works. She starts off to dig at Sasha Banks, which the pair have history of obviously the hate towards each other. So it will be interesting to see what happens when they both clash at Mania. This is followed by Naomi coming out, and it all falls apart. She just ruins this for me. I mean, I hate her on the mic. I mean, I've given her the benefit of the doubt since she obviously returned. But I had forgot how much I disliked her on the mic. In ring, she's great. She's flexible. She's agile. Everything in ring is perfect. But I hate the persona, which I actually think is quite natural to her. So I think it's quite close to her actual real personality. But it's what the UK would call a chav. Now, I do not know what that means where you are from. I don't know what the word means, but in England it means that sort of like brash and loutish behavior, a sort of like street thuggy sort of like hood character in a way, if that makes sense. Just that sort of like arrogant, really loud, like not just confident and cocky, that I don't know, sort of thuggy character, which I do not like in a woman. I do not like in a girl at all. So for me, I don't really like it. Obviously, some people will. I'm sure the Usos love it, if that's really what she's like. And to be fair, they are quite similar to that as well. So I can see how that works. This is then interrupted by the final Mania match opponent being Tamina. Now, she doesn't say much. She never has said much. But then that leads on to her attacking Naomi, and then this sort of botched super kick to the chest of Lacey Evans. I mean, if it was aimed at the chest, it was perfect, but a super kick to me is always in the face, so there was a little bit of a botch, and Tamina was always quite good at super kicks, if I remember. But anyway, that's just maybe Lacey was too close or whatever. Anyway, it was a slight botched move. This for me was expected, but it was a solid build to the match and it was definitely needed. WWE normally do a segment like this before a big six, obviously in this case five, man, obviously in this case woman, like a six-man match as it gets everyone in the ring so the fans can see all the superstars together, and of course some sort of attack or brawl always breaks out. The way they built this to me is actually working really, really well, and works even better without Dana Brooke, because to me it's a sort of Sasha versus Lacey and a Naomi versus Bayley type of rivalry, which we have seen in tag team matches and single matches not that long ago. So by having a powerhouse like Tamina come in, and it just adds that different dimension and that type of shock value to the match, because you do not know which way to look. And this is what you want when you've got a fatal four-way or a fatal five-way or fatal six-way or whatever. That type of loads of superstars in the ring all competing against each other at one time. Now, I'm sure I can speak for everyone and say that the powerhouse we would all have preferred would have been Nia Jax instead of Tamina. But I do think Tamina can add just as much as Nia if the physicality is booked right. Plus, we are all going to be on edge of our seats waiting for the inevitable clash between best friends Sasha and Bayley. Now, I can see them working together for most of the match. I can see Lacey and Naomi having some good momentum at points, but ultimately getting overpowered by maybe Sasha and Bayley working together, or even just Tamina on her own, and then leading to a two-on-one attack on Tamina from the champion and her friend. So this match is going to be a must-watch for me. I'm excited to see who walks away victorious, which really could lead to a friendship ending in Sasha and Bayley. And then that could lead to a big, big feud after Mania. I can't see the other three winning, if I'm honest. But again, this is only a SmackDown review. Next week on the Go Home episode of SmackDown, I'll give all my full predictions on what I think. And I'll touch on that a little bit more next week. So next up is Drew Gulak accompanied by Daniel Bryan versus Shinsuke Nakamura accompanied by Cesaro and Sami Zayn, with the stipulation being if Gulak wins, then Sami will defend the Intercontinental Championship against Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. Now, the match, Shinsuke starts off with this fantastic striking ability, and the two stars in ring seem to take it in turns to get on top of each other in the match. Now, it seems to be fluid in the fact that Shinsuke would be on top for a short time, then Gulak would counter and do the same, and so on and so on. So it's a little bit of back and forth, but to me there was a little bit too much. Although it was very fluid and they worked very well together, it was just a little bit too much of it, if you know what I mean. Just for me, anyway. Shinsuke goes to hit the Kinshasa, which is beautifully countered by Bryan pulling Gulak out of the way, resulting in this sort of like jackknife pin, holding both of Shinsuke's legs for a 1-2-3 pinfall. This match was nothing special, as you could probably guess from my tone. I thought the finish was a bit of a letdown, because I wanted a clean pin. Now, I know it was a clean pin, but I wanted a sort of like full finisher clean pin from Gulak to really prove he was the better guy. And as I said last week, I wanted more of the counter-attack style. The Drew that we saw him showing this during his matches a few weeks ago against Bryan at the Elimination Chamber. Now, this has sort of been lost, and my concerns have been brought to light in the fact that Bryan hasn't helped Gulak progress up the WWE ladder. He's just turned into Bryan's little sidekick, which I don't really like. I didn't see the point of them getting together for him just to do this. Like, why isn't Gulak facing Sami? Why has Gulak dropped this the teacher sort of coach type character, which is why Bryan linked up with him in the first place? Because he beat him and he loved his counter style, his plan, his game plan for each match. So I don't really understand it. For me, I'm not too fussed who wins this match at Mania, and I think there is benefits for both being champions. I mean, Sami's run has been quite short, and with his little faction gaining some more momentum and Sami being a fantastic mic worker and also in commentary, which I actually thought saved this match to a degree, I would probably leave the title on him. It just depends on the Gulak situation, because if they want the pairing to stay together of Bryan and Gulak, then I wish they would make Gulak into that main star in this double act, like the babyface manager, which in WWE we rarely see anymore, due to most managers being heels. For example, Paul Heyman or Zelina Vega, like they're the most recent ones. A babyface manager is something we do not see, which is basically a coach for Bryan with his counter moves. Like, they both can use the mic, and Gulak could be a manager that can also take a bump and get involved when needed. Obviously, Paul Heyman does not do that. I mean, granted, he takes bumps very, very seldomly, and the same as Zelina Vega, but someone that can actually get involved when needed as a superstar, being Gulak with all the game plans and all the coaching, with even his slideshow gimmick, like, I just feel like that is the best way to do this. I mean, this is what I want to see. However, another viable option is for Gulak to attack Bryan and carry on the short-lived feud, which provided us with that exceptional match at the Chamber. For me, I don't want this yet. Sami is a good champion, and the partnership of Bryan and Gulak seems to work, even though I'd prefer it booked slightly different, as I've just explained. I mean, the heel turn from either character is always an option for the future, and that's not something you need to rush. So one thing that we can guarantee is that the Mania match between Sami and Bryan will not just be a one-on-one. There will be some sort of involvement from the other three men in Gulak for Bryan and Shinsuke and Cesaro, which they're all going to be cooking up some sort of plans between themselves on the outside, watching in. So again, next week I'll be bringing you predictions. We'll see how the go home episode prevails, and we'll get on with it then. So leading on, Dolph Ziggler is on the phone backstage. Now, he's a little bit disappointed that this sort of segment was backstage. I could tell there was going to be some sort of segment with these guys, but anyway, I'll get to it. Dolph is on the phone backstage, and then Heavy Machinery trying to attack Dolph. Now, both Otis and Tucker are being held back, and then Dolph challenges. Although he does challenge, he basically more like confirms what we were all expecting and wanting. A WrestleMania match between Otis and Dolph, which I believe will have Tucker and Mandy ringside. And that was confirmed pretty much confirmed later on in the show. So the thing that annoyed me about this short segment, and of course I would prefer it in the ring, but it wasn't, so it was backstage. It was okay backstage. The thing that really annoyed me about this segment was that we saw Otis in utter rage and destruction and complete anger last week, taking a beating to Dolph, Miz and Morrison with a chair, and Tucker couldn't get him to stop. Heavy Machinery is built on the size and the strength, and then somehow you get a couple of suited men and some referees holding back both men, protecting Dolph. Now, referees have always been the easiest things to knock over. Think back to the Ronda, Becky and Charlotte brawl, which is fairly recently, but even the women were flying them everywhere with throws and strikes, and now suddenly Otis and Tucker, with their size, can't get past any of them. For me, it just made both men look extremely weak. From the depth they added to the characters last week, or especially Otis' character, I mean, I would have liked Otis's like acceptance to be in a form of at least a punch, or throw Dolph into something backstage, or pick him up and slam him. It just didn't happen. Like, apparently referees have now been in the gym and aren't as weak and as useless at fighting as they used to be. I don't really get it, to be honest. The match itself at Mania will be interesting in the fact that Dolph is going to be, he's a great consistent worker, so he's going to be good. And it'll be also interesting to see how Otis fares in a singles match. The likelihood of Mandy playing some part in the match, it's going to happen, which could cause the win for Dolph, or even lead to Tucker getting involved, meaning a DQ win for Dolph. If there was fans in attendance to get the pop for Otis finally winning over Dolph, I think that would have swayed my prediction. However, with it being behind closed doors and probably pre-recorded anyway, but more than anything, behind closed doors, a heel win in the form of Otis getting screwed over, it just sets up the feud to carry on, which I know WWE are thinking about. So I think that is probably where they're going. But again, this was only a short segment just to basically confirm the WrestleMania match. And of course, I'll bring you my predictions next week. The next part of the show was Elias performing a song about Corbin, which to me was just cringy, and it was a bit corny at the same time. Like, to me, I think these type of things need to be personal. They need to be harsh and not the light-hearted like humour that clearly won't affect any grown-up in the way that it's supposed to. Now, of course, you throw some light-hearted humour in there, you can be a little bit funny with it, but ultimately you need to get the backup of the superstar or the person you're trying to antagonise. Like, to me, like having Corbin's picture on a toilet roll, like that's not something that would annoy me. It would make me think, this guy's clueless. Like, he's not getting under my skin. It's not working. Like, to me, if you're trying to annoy someone, or especially in this storyline in WWE, you really need to make it obvious what you're trying to do. To me, it was almost like they were playing a game rather than trying to annoy each other, if that makes sense. But the platform which Elias was performing on was a great use of the performance center. So I've already touched on the fact that they've moved the hard camera and you see the ring in front of the stage with the blue and the ramp and everything like that. I think this is another great use of where they are, which we have actually seen in NXT with a big memory of mine of another star from the UK, William Regal, announcing War Games for the women. That was last year. So Corbin attacks Elias and he does some silly clamber over the bars on the podium, which led to him holding on by two hands, saving him from the drop. Now, this is also seen in a lot of Battle Royal and Royal Rumble eliminations. Like, to me, why, when a WWE superstars get hit, do they turn around and jump over the barricade or jump over the ropes or whatever is in their way? Now, it's just not a natural reaction to turn around, like to get punched in the face, turn around and jump. It's not. Like, you get hit, you might go down, or you might hold your face, or you might step back, or you might retaliate, whatever way. But not once have I seen anyone turn around, jump over. It's just in WWE. And again, that's going back to the realistic side of things. I prefer it to be relatable. I prefer it to be realistic to what I'm watching. But anyway, hey-ho. That's just how I feel. It would make more sense Corbin actually putting him over the bars, like almost like hurting him on the floor and then like picking him up and almost placing him over the bar. And yes, he did give him a slight nudge, but that was basically because Elias got caught and he got stuck on the top of the bars, so he gave him a little nudge to help him over. Anyway, this leads to Corbin hitting Elias with the scepter, and Elias plummets to the floor, which they claim has badly injured him. Now, it's important to add, you don't actually see Elias hit the floor. You see him fall, but the camera is pointing up. And then when you do see him again, he's on the hard floor laying still with officials calling for help. I'm presuming this so-called injury is much more towards kayfabe than any real accident, because I just feel that, obviously, that segment was planned. It was written how it should be. That wasn't a mistake that he fell. So what I can imagine was there was some sort of padding, and obviously he gets up, they move the padding, he lays on the floor, and they show you that. So I don't really think the real incident and the accident, the injury type thing is real. There's been a lot of rumours online. I see a lot of things on Twitter, and people have been DMing me trying to get me to find out if Elias is injured. I don't think he is. But I do like the way they've built this with a different segment using the layout of the Performance Center. And I actually can't wait for the match at Mania. I mean, nothing gets better than a proper babyface versus a proper heel. I mean, it's just such an old school style of match, which I'm looking forward to. And again, I'll bring my predictions next week. But if you think back to when you were a kid, when you first started watching WWE and you weren't analysing it for being realistic and you weren't relating it to real life situations, you just loved to watch a proper babyface against a proper heel. Whether you even knew it at the time, whether you even knew what they were at the time, you knew what a good guy was, you knew what a bad guy was from superhero things and programs that you'd watch on telly, cartoons and everything like that, comic books. You knew that a good guy versus a bad guy, it's just a thing that happens. It's just a natural confrontation between two stars. And that's what I can't wait, because that is a classic. There's real heat with Corbin, and there's real love from the crowd and pops from the crowd for Elias. Granted, there's not going to be a crowd, which I think this match will be slightly missing. But if they're already using this podium type area at the Performance Center and Elias falling off, and especially bringing the scepter involved, you never know. This match might have a stipulation, which I think it needs. But also, there's nothing saying that there might not be a disqualification, and leading into some spots with some weapons or anything like that to build the feud even further down the line. I'm excited for this one. I really am. So then we move on to the women. We get Asuka versus Alexa Bliss with Nikki Cross on commentary. Now, Nikki Cross was actually very, very good on commentary. She was getting involved and really cheering for Alexa, like almost like a cheerleader and almost like a fan. And this made it okay, because the fact, obviously, there was no fans. So it worked. And like the way her and Michael Cole worked together was very funny. It was just excellent for the match itself. And it propelled Nikki Cross up in my books, in my estimations. The match itself was very, very solid. They usually are with Asuka. They usually are with Alexa Bliss. You put them together, you're going to get a great match. There was some great use of the outside the ring, the ring apron. I especially loved Alexa. The spinning type arm drag on the outside, where it led to Asuka landing on the ring apron, and it led to like a shoulder injury for the match. And I actually thought that both women were in top form, along with Nikki Cross on commentary. I thought all three of them, and Michael Cole, was actually in top form for this match. There was some new moves from the women inside the ring. And it just felt like a hard-hitting and physical match, along with the technicality. The match felt like a much better level to a typical women's match for me, because I'm not always a massive fan, as I've said in some of the previous podcasts. I find some of them a little bit tedious, just because they can't pull off some of the moves that they try and do, that the men do. Now, in this match, I actually thought that the women do moves that the women do that the men don't. And the same, it would be exactly the same if the men tried what the women were doing. It just wouldn't work for me. The only thing, and I'm sure if you listen to my podcast all the time, you'll guess what I'm going to say, is it could have been improved if Asuka stopped that silly dancing, but that is just personal preference. For me, Alexa Bliss is constantly improving. I mean, she thrives in many different roles as a face, a heel, even in this tag team partnership with Nikki Cross, as a Mania host, the Moment of Bliss talk show. I mean, she's very, very versatile. And her in-ring ability in this match just shows the versatility in a whole new light. Nikki is very, very excited to become tag team champions again, which I can definitely see happening. And then somehow I'd like Alexa to elevate into the women's championship title picture. I mean, I don't want them to turn on each other. But then again, I do think that would be a great option a long way down the line. I mean, let's just focus on the current sort of state of play. I think a Mania match would be the obvious option, but nothing's been announced yet, and I don't know if that's because, well, it probably is because of Kairi Sane's absence. Now, obviously, you can't defend a title if you can't actually be there, so we'll have to see if there's any announcements. Check my Twitter to see the updated WrestleMania cards each day or each time there's an announcement. I'll be updating that regularly. So we had the Firefly Funhouse return with Bray Wyatt. Now, I'm a little bit disappointed we haven't had any war of words between Cena and Wyatt like some of Cena's old matchups and the feuds, but I mean, this whole lockdown situation definitely hasn't helped that because of the travel matters. But that's just, again, preference. I was hoping for the war of words because to me, it would have been a sort of passing of the torch in terms of who's got the best promo. And the one they cut a couple of weeks ago, where they were in the ring together, I just thought it was personal. It was somewhat brutal. It made sense. It was real. It was passionate. And it was just everything that this feud should and would be. So anyway, this Firefly Funhouse, it was quite a quick promo, but anyway, it was Wyatt back to his best. It was more like Wyatt being mysterious. I mean, he talks to the lantern of the old Bray Wyatt's head, saying he's had his chance and he failed. Abby the Witch asks if he has the secret recipe to beat Cena, and it flips to Bray making a smoothie with all these different ingredients like misery and stuff like that, and then he includes Ramblin' Rabbit into the blender. So Ramblin' Rabbit's dying again. I mean, that rabbit has more lives than a cat. Like, he just dies and gets his head ripped apart, and then he somehow comes back. But anyway, Bray is drinking his smoothie, and he's normal, he's all happy, and he's cheery, and then suddenly he does that switch, saying there is one last nasty side effect, and then it just flashes with these glimpses of the Fiend on the screen. I mean, the whole thing is just a work of art, like, from his creative side, and I'm hoping the actual physical match is just like this. He challenges Cena to a Firefly Funhouse match, which, if it's something like the Wyatt Orton or the Wyatt Hardy, then pre-recorded matches in the past, I'm not particularly looking forward to it. Although it would be definitely intriguing. Like, don't get me wrong, I was excited for their matches. I just didn't really like it. But I think this stipulation has definitely been put in place due to the stay-at-home order in Orlando, where the Performance Center is. This basically means that, along with the Undertaker Styles Boneyard match, it can technically be filmed anywhere they want. I'm actually being optimistic and I'm being positive about Bray having it pre-recorded in a Firefly Funhouse match, because it could mean, and I hope it means, that Bray has, again, the vast majority of the creative input along with Cena, so this match actually could turn out to be one of the matches of the night. That being said, we all know pre-recorded matches don't tend to work, especially when they're not in the ring, or at least in, like, the stadium or arena or performance center or whatever, when they're sort of like outside in a graveyard or a pretend cottage in the woods. Like, we've seen it all before, but for me, we'll see. I'm going to stay positive with this one. To finish off SmackDown, we had the New Day versus Usos with the tag team title champions Miz and Morrison on commentary with Michael Cole. Now, this is much better than having Miz and Morrison in ring, because as of lately, they have been lacking in effort and consistency for me. Just watching this match re-emphasises my point about the Miz's mic work and the difference between him and Morrison. The Miz is amazing on the mic, and this felt natural. It felt like he was back to himself. Morrison tries to chip in now and again, and he doesn't have the same impact. He doesn't have the same effect vocally in what he says and just how he says it. It just doesn't come across like the Miz I want to listen to. When Morrison gets on, it feels like a superstar that doesn't really want to be on the mic, whether that's from the indie shows because they don't have a lot of storyline mic work, or maybe it's just not natural to him. I mean, some superstars do struggle, as we've seen in the past. It might just be one of them. The match itself was yet another classic in my eyes. Now, whenever you put the New Day and the Usos together in the ring, I put money on it that it is going to be purely a solid match from start to finish. I mean, they work so well together, and the chemistry each team has between themselves and also the opposition, in this case, is just wonderful. Like, it's beautiful to watch, and it's a type of match which makes you realise why you love WWE and pro wrestling. that, in my opinion, I could watch these two tag teams face off without fans, without commentary, and I just enjoy the styles that much. I just think it's excellent, and it is just what WWE is to me, and what I love in tag teams, and everything about the match. I just love the moveset, the skill set, the storyline that each tag team can tell at the same time while performing. So both teams end up outside the ring, near the commentary, and my fears came true again. So here we go. Miz and Morrison, hey hey, ho ho. It seems like it's staying with them standing on the announce table. They were chanting it. I mean, it is just shockingly bad. And if I could describe it with swear words on this podcast, and don't worry, I'm not going to swear, but I'd use every single one in the book. It is that bad. I'm from the UK, right? We created a sport which has more chants and songs than any other. That's football, that's soccer. Plus, we have better fans than anyone else in the world at these chants. Now, I'm not saying that we love sport more than you or like any of that, but I'm saying in atmosphere and chants alone, that you can't top us. We, that is what we are. We have such a big football culture over here that we make up songs, we make up chants. They're catchy. You get the whole crowd going. It's just something we do. That to me is a terrible, terrible chant. And so listening to something like that for me is just embarrassing. So anyway, that's a rant over. I'm sure this will be a common thing if this chant does continue. So please get used to it, guys, unfortunately. But anyway, Kofi swipes Morrison's leg to finally end that chant. But anyway, it ends up with the tag team champs attacking both the other tag teams, leading to like a joint disqualification. Michael Cole then announces that WWE has put all three tag teams in a ladder match for the titles at WrestleMania. Now, I did not expect it to have a stipulation. I didn't actually expect it to be like a triple threat. But this is the match of the night for me, and it hasn't even been on yet. Like, anyone that follows me on Twitter will have seen my post over the weekend about my favourite face, my favourite heel, my favourite match stipulation. And that is a ladder match. This is because of the spots that can be created, the high spots. It doesn't have to be high up in the air, but the oh my god moments. And the one of the biggest ones for me is the way the winner is above everything, holding the title when the match finishes. I just think it's an epic way to settle this sort of feud, and to have all three unbelievable teams. Okay, well, two unbelievable teams, and then at least the experience of the tag team champions, which I'm hoping, and they should be well up for it, and all effort put towards this match. And what it could be is providing us with a Mania match for the ages. Now, I won't bother reviewing Roman Reigns versus Triple H as the repeat from WrestleMania, because I don't really see the point. I mean, it was a long time ago. You can probably find all the reviews about it at the time. It's just used as a gap filler. It was basically just showing Roman at WrestleMania against Triple H. Triple H then, in an interview recently, has sort of said he backs Roman Reigns to beat Goldberg at WrestleMania. Now, obviously, we now know that Roman Reigns won't be performing at WrestleMania. The rumours are it's going to be Braun Strowman instead, picked by Roman Reigns. And that's because of the illness, and obviously with his leukemia that he's had, he doesn't want to risk it. So fair play to him, and big respect for standing his ground with this. In terms of WWE storyline, I'm sort of glad, because again, if you listen to my podcast, I'm not a huge fan of Roman Reigns. When he did return from obviously the illness, you've got to give huge respect to the guy behind the character. And I did actually like him for a bit when he did return, because I thought he brought something different. And then all of a sudden he slips back into that same forced character, which I don't like. So we'll have to see how Braun Strowman and Goldberg, if it is Braun Strowman, face off. Again, next week it might get confirmed, so I'll bring predictions and sort of like a a preview for you then. And in fact, depending on when I record this, because sometimes I record it on a Saturday, sometimes I record it on a Sunday, I might actually just hold off and do a little bit of like a WrestleMania SmackDown review, if that makes sense. So the matches that I'm talking about in this podcast, and I have been talking about just during SmackDown, obviously I can sort of review them, add my predictions, but also see what happens, because then you're not listening to my predictions after it's already happened. But I'll try and work it out nearer the time. So again, follow me on Twitter at Aid Wrestle, that's AID Wrestle. Reach out for any discussions or topics you want to talk about, to know about, or just give me some feedback on my podcast episodes. Also, check out my Twitter for the latest news updates, where I've got, as I said, the up-to-date Mania cards. I've got AJ Styles' own comments on what a Boneyard match is, WWE's plans moving forward for the shows being behind closed doors with no fans until this pandemic clears up, and more. I will continue to regularly update with the relevant news. And this is because when I first started these podcasts, when Matt first sort of signed me up to do the WWE podcast, what I wanted to bring was up-to-date news, because to me, finding out if someone's injured, finding out why this has happened, and sort of the backstory behind it, the sort of behind-the-scenes stuff that WWE doesn't always tell you, I find that very interesting. That's the stuff I want to know, so I wanted to share it over the podcast. Now, obviously, I'm doing a SmackDown review, which I thoroughly enjoy. I prefer SmackDown. I love it. I love what I do. So what I'm going to do is just post it on Twitter. Everyone can see it. We can talk about it, because we are a wrestling community. You see me hashtag that a lot. So again, as I said, reach out. We can discuss it. There's a lot of interaction going on my Twitter. I'm trying to be as active as I can. So enjoy your week the best you can, and once again, stay safe and listen to your local guidelines on the current situation. And of course, I'll be back next week to talk to you guys about the go home episode of SmackDown and the full sort of predictions, as I said, maybe sort of like review of SmackDown at Mania, but we'll see. It's going to be a crazy WrestleMania, the first 2-day WrestleMania event, which I tell you now, I am very excited about. So we'll see what WWE's got planned, and we'll see what they've got planned for SmackDown next week. Thanks for listening. See you later, guys.
I think you know me.